sound familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
A mother's breastfeeding experience changes drastically over time, starting from her child's birth through the months of her baby's life. Today, we continue our conversation in our series called Breastfeeding Expectations. Over 12 months, we are following three new mothers along their breastfeeding journeys, learning how they cope with breastfeeding challenges and settle into the breastfeeding rhythm with their babies. This is The Boob Group, episode 51.
Breast milk, it does a baby good.
Silly daddy, boobs are for babies.
I make milk. What's your superpower?
If my breastfeeding offends you, put a blanket over your head.
Dairy diva.
Don't be lactose intolerant.
Nursing nature's own breast enhancement.
Meals on heels.
Whoever said there's no use crying over spilled milk never had to pump.
Breast milk. All udders are inferior.
Whatever your point of view, we're here to support your breastfeeding goals. We're the Boob Group, because mothers know breast. Welcome to The Boob Group, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. The Boob Group is your weekly online, on-the-go support group for all things related to breastfeeding. I'm your host, Robin Kaplan. I'm also an International Board Certified Lactation Consultant and owner of the San Diego Breastfeeding Center. Thanks to all of our loyal listeners who have joined the Boob Group Club. Our members get all of our archived episodes, bonus content after each new show, plus special giveaways and discounts. Subscribe to our monthly newsletter for a chance to win a membership to our club each month. Another way for you to stay connected is by downloading our free app, available in the Android and iTunes marketplace. Today we are joined again by our three lovely panelists. Ladies, will you please go around and introduce yourselves? We'll start with you, Jen.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Oliver. I'm 34 years old. I work in nonprofit administration, and I have two kids. Fiona is three, and she's sitting behind me with earplugs in, working on my cell phone. And Bryson is also with me today, and he is 10 months, almost 11 months.
Hi, I'm Cherry Christensen. I'm 32. I work in consumer research, and I have one daughter. Her name is Callie, and she is exactly 10 months old today.
Yeah.
Very hard to believe. Yes. We're going to try solids again.
All right, Annie, go for it.
Hi, everybody. I am Annie Hall. I am 36 years old. I'm an architect, and I have one daughter. Her name is Eleanor, and she is just about 11 months old next week.
Woohoo! All right, ladies. Well, thanks for being here, and welcome back to the show.
Sound familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
So here's an email that was sent from one of our listeners, and this is from Caitlin, and she wrote, "Dear Robin, nearly 5 months ago, I sat in my son's room a month from my due date and was searching the app store for something, an audiobook maybe, to listen to while I put his teeny clothes away. Instead, I found the Boob Group, and I am so glad I did. I knew I really wanted to breastfeed and took classes at a local pregnancy resource center on breastfeeding, signed up for WIC, read books, and educated myself as much as I could throughout my pregnancy because, by golly, I was determined. I listened to many of the episodes the last 3 weeks of my pregnancy, and it helped me be less overwhelmed by the thought of breastfeeding. Before I allowed my visitors in to meet my baby, I was sure to try and feed him. It was mildly successful. I think that having a non-breastfeeding mother hovering over me was more of a hindrance than I will ever admit to anyone but you, but she was trying to help. I will admit, however, that I committed some breastfeeding sins in the hospital and soon after. Pacifiers and supplementing on doctor's orders due to severe jaundice are things I would change if I had to go at it again. Even though I'm a sinner, and I say that in the most sarcastic way, my son is almost 4 months old and thriving. We were able to ditch the formula after a couple of weeks, haven't had any latch issues after the first week, and this child is outgrowing his clothes faster than he can wear them. I am so proud of myself for sticking with breastfeeding and learned so much about it. I have become so passionate about it that I want to promote it to every new and soon-to-be mom. I have decided to begin school in the fall to become a lactation consultant and show other moms that if I can breastfeed my son successfully, anyone can. Thank you for being an unknowing guide to my career decision. If you have any advice, I would love to hear it. Thank you, Caitlin.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today in the Boob Group, we're discussing what Annie, Jen, and Cherry's breastfeeding experiences have been like during their baby's 10th month. So ladies, let's just start it off. What is it like to breastfeed a baby in their 10 month, and what does your breastfeeding relationship look like right now? Jen?
I think right now it's actually going really well. We are not avid breastfeeders over here. Bryson is kind of more interested in solids than he is in my boobs. But it helps when he's sick. He loves to breastfeed. And then also he's still kind of breastfeeding a lot at night. Sometimes it's 1 to 3 times at night. So that kind of helps keep the supply up. And he's actually not as distracted. So now he'll actually breastfeed through a full cycle of letdown on both sides. But it's pretty easy, but it's not a big deal for Bryson.
Yeah. But I love that you brought up, and I'm sorry to cut the other two ladies off real quickly, but I love that you brought up how helpful it is when your baby's sick, because that's another reason why a lot of parents will actually, or moms will continue to breastfeed even into toddlerhood, because sometimes when kiddos don't feel like eating anything else, at least they know that they're getting nutrients, and it's also very comforting. So he probably totally ramped up your supply in the past week or so. With that nice little pink eye.
We've been sick for like a couple months straight between the two of them. So,
aww. How about you, Cherry? What is breastfeeding looking like for you?
You know, it doesn't look that different to 9 months for me. I think everything's pretty much the same. Callie's still nursing all the time, especially when I come home from work and all night long. I feel like maybe she's not nursing quite as much, but don't get me wrong, it's still a lot because she was nursing so much before that even a little bit less is still way more than everybody else's child's nighttime behavior. And she's still not that interested in the bottle during the day from my husband. She'll take, you know, just enough to get by as always. But I think I'm just fine with it. You know, when we're together, it's great. And I'm being more and more back at work, and work is getting busier and busier, and pumping is harder and harder for me to make the time. I love that I can just come home and right away she wants me, and we nurse right away, and it's this like connection that kind of picks right up, that even if I've been gone for 8 or 12 hours. And so I'm really enjoying it. It's going really well.
Awesome. How about you, Annie?
It's going really well. I'd say it's I feel like I'm at the end. But that's just simply because of my schedule and maybe just where I'm feeling. I don't feel like she needs it as much. But we bottle during the day and she takes it just fine. And we breastfeed first thing in the morning, and then breastfeeds essentially before she goes to bed, and that's it.
Yeah.
So, and then on the weekend, it's all the time.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
Yeah, and it's probably a little more often than she would during the week, just because I can feel it coming, and so it's uncomfortable for me, so I just put her on. I probably completely screw her up for the whole weekend.
Because then I don't know
what her schedule is all day, because I'm in between just putting her on one side, putting her on the other. But I still definitely, my left side is maybe an ounce, and the right side is like 5. And so I put her on one side so that she makes sure that she gets it, and there's something that comes out. And she for sure gets more than the bottle, than the pump does, for sure. And then the other side, I just, yeah. So I'm absolutely lopsided, but it works.
That's awesome. Ladies, what is your favorite part about breastfeeding a 10-month-old?
When she's asleep. You know, someone actually asked me this question yesterday, not about breastfeeding, but just kind of like moments of peace that I have in my life. And if I could like box up a little moment of happiness, like what moment would that be? And the first thing that I thought about was just kind of late at night when, you know, I really struggled to get her to sleep. And when she's finally asleep and she's just laying in my arms, nursing, sort of like side-lying in bed, or the exact same in the morning when I'm awake and she's not awake yet. And she's just quiet and peaceful. Just because she has so much energy and I have so little energy that it's like in those moments where, you know, I don't need to have more, and we just kind of, you know, are both sort of giving each other exactly what we, you know, exactly what we need. So, to me, that's probably my favorite moments, although I love all of it. Like, you know, those moments when I come home from work that I just mentioned are pretty great too.
That's awesome. How about you, Annie? What's your favorite part about breastfeeding a 10-month-old?
Maybe the moment when she's right when she's done.
Yeah.
Because she's sleeping. I mean, yeah. Like so now it's on the weekend. It's just kind of all the time, and she's done, and she just kind of rolls away, and she's ready to keep walking and learn what she's doing. But it's when she's falling asleep at the end of the day, and she knows when she's done, and she kind of just moves to her finger,
yeah.
And she puts her thumb in her mouth, and then she just kind of like nuzzles in. But now lately, it's like she squirms because I know she just wants to go lay down.
Yeah.
So I try to hold on. but yeah, it's that sweet, quiet moment.
Yeah.
And I think that also now I don't feel as desperate. Like this is her only source of sustenance, and this has to, I'm not desperate. I don't feel nervous. It's just, it's going okay. And I'm actually not sore. And so I probably, it's not funny. My favorite part of breastfeeding is now that I'm at like 11 months, I'm almost done. At least that's how I feel.
Totally. How about you, Jen? What's your favorite part about breastfeeding Bryson at this age?
I think my favorite part at this point is just when he's fussy and he's frustrated and there's nothing else that can console him. It's just that moment of knowing that I can console him. And usually he'll go from this like fussy state to just this really peaceful state. And it's a really calming place. I remember with Fiona, it was she would breastfeed for so much longer, and I had those moments that Sherry was talking about where it was just like so quiet and so peaceful and so nice. And Bryson's so much shorter that those moments are so much shorter.
Yeah.
And I still really relish them.
I think I would say the same thing too, that it's the little noises that she makes, that she's like she's just it's just right there. You can't wait any longer. Which is so sweet.
Well, Annie, you know, you had mentioned too that you don't have to worry about it being like her main sustenance, and you had a question for me outside of this this episode, but you were just asking about, you know, bringing home, maybe not bringing home as much as you were before, and how you're not stressing out about that anymore, and also just some thoughts about things that you can start introducing now that she's actually 11 months old. But how are you handling that right now with the amount that you're bringing home? If you end up bringing home 5 ounces, but she may have taken more, how's she doing with that?
She's fine. Well, and there. So what happens is when I have my period through that cycle, I make less, and I start to eat oatmeal. And I'm eating it normally anyway, but I start to ramp up on oatmeal and teas and stuff, and then I just don't worry about it. And I tried it one day, and she went and had you know, food and the milk, and then, you know, she survived. She's not gonna die.
Yeah.
So, and it's only going to be a couple days. It wasn't like it was this transition where it was only 3 to 4 ounces a day for 2 weeks at a time. And so I kind of let go and let my cycle process. And then I ramp back up to like 6 ounces at work. And then I supplement with another pump that night. So I just came to the realization that I'll just work through that period of time, and it's fine. And she's eating fine, and she eats like 3 times a day, and so I look at her and she's fine, like, yeah. You know, she's not super skinny, and she's active, and she's fine. So the only place I would start to worry is if I felt like there wasn't something developmentally, she wasn't hitting her targets
milestones.
Stuff, yeah. Yeah, which I think she's fine, so yeah. I'm okay.
Very cool. Yeah. And I was going to mention, too, because you had asked me, like, you know, once I get to this point where I'm not producing as much milk on a regular basis, or you're starting to wean, for example, what can you switch to? And so even at 11 months, you know, at 12 months is kind of that time where pediatricians will start feeling comfortable with parents introducing cow dairy. And even though a lot of families will actually introduce yogurt way sooner than 12 months. But a lot of times what you can do, even starting at about 11 months, is looking at, you know, coconut milk, for example, is really highly nutritious. And it's not something I would switch to fully, but the fact is you don't need to. You're still producing plenty of breast milk. But for those times where you felt like she was a little bit thirsty, obviously you can offer her water at this age too. But coconut milk can be really good. Hemp milk can be really good. Rice milk is a little bit sugary. And so, but those are nice little complements when you're doing solids and breast milk, and if you feel like you need a little bit extra. And the only thing you're going to look for, same thing like when you're doing solid foods, is there an allergic reaction? Does my baby have an allergic reaction to the coconut milk or to the hemp milk or whatever it is? And if they do, then obviously it's an allergenic food for them. But if it's not, then those are really, really nice, healthy fats and good substitutes. Or not substitutes, but I should say complements to everything else that she's getting. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, when we come back, Annie, Jen, and Cherry will be discussing what solids their babies are eating right now and how to keep going to meet their goal of breastfeeding for a year and beyond. We'll be right back. Welcome back. So today we're talking with Annie, Jen, and Cherry about breastfeeding during their baby's 10th month. So Cherry, how is Callie doing on solids now?
She's not.
She's still taking her time, huh?
Yeah, you know, we haven't really pushed it. I haven't been in any huge hurry for a variety of different reasons. And we kind of decided she's 10 months today, and we decided, you know what, maybe today we'll give her a little bit of avocado. So we'll see how it goes. We have plans this afternoon, and we won't be home for a couple hours. So I decided, let's just do it when we get home. That way, if it takes 20 hours, or if it doesn't go well, or whatever, I don't have to worry about, you know, rushing to be somewhere. So we're going to try that. So next month, I'll let you know how it goes. But I'm not planning on necessarily, like, if it goes well, like, okay, now we're going to go to, you know, to solids,
oh,
you know, three
sure,
times
sure.
a day or anything like that. And we're actually about to go on vacation, which I'm very excited about. It's our first family vacation ever. And I'm almost thinking, you know, if she was on solids, it would be fine. But I'm almost actually thinking now that it's maybe better to just that she's not, and we can wait till we come home to kind of go at it a little bit more seriously, just because then I don't have to worry about food when we're traveling. I can nurse her on the plane, and I always have breast milk wherever we are. I don't have to pump. I'm so excited. I'm going to take a hand pump with me just in case, but you know, I don't have to pump. And then also because we cloth diaper, and I will be traveling with cloth diapers to Hawaii, I'm thinking, like, oh, it's going to be so great that she's not really on solids yet, because that's just one less thing to deal with, like, especially if I'm in a confined space, like on a plane. So we'll see, you know. I'm not in any kind of huge hurry, and although I am starting to it's unbelievable, starting to plan her birthday and I'm now thinking, like, oh my gosh, like, well, she's, you know, we're definitely not going to have some sort of like smash cake. Even if we would, it would have been something super healthy, like rolled oats cake with agave syrup or something. But even now I was like, well, there's no way we're going to do that if she hasn't even like had a bite of anything other than chewing on a carrot. There was a choking on a piece of celery incident. But for the most part, you know, we haven't done any food yet. So we'll see. No rush.
Cool. Very cool. All right. So, and that actually gets to a question, you know, a lot of doctors will actually start getting concerned that that babies aren't getting enough iron initially. So what happens is a baby's iron stores that they're born with are perfectly sufficient until babies reach about 6 to 9 months. And then that's when we start introducing iron-rich foods and things like that. And so I'm curious for the ladies who have been doing a lot more solids, Are you finding that you're using more iron-rich foods now that your babies are about 10 months old? Have you even thought about it? Are you using iron drops? I know Jen's laughing. She's like, I know, right? Well, I know a lot of people, it is a common question that we get actually a lot is, do breastfed babies actually need iron supplements?
Well, I would love to comment on this since I'm not doing food, actually. Yeah. I think I have a unique perspective. Not only are we not doing solids, but I'm vegan. So people were, and I have a history of being anemic. Uh-huh. So people like worry all the time. And I know it's a concern about, you know, does iron transfer into breast milk, and formulas are all supplemented with iron, or not all of them, but many of them. And so at her 9-month appointment, which was, I guess, was about a month ago, which we weren't even going to go to other than he said, oh, well, at 9 months, we do like to check the baby's iron levels. And I was so nervous because I was just like, I mean, I knew it wouldn't be bad if there was something there, but I'd heard that the supplements can be really binding and constipating. And I just didn't want to have to worry about it, or didn't want to start getting flack from the doctor about the solids. And so they said, oh, well, we can give you the results right now. It's really quick, which I didn't know that. So I was waiting in the room, and I had done some research about what time of day iron levels are highest, and like I was going to eat certain foods. Well, I didn't do any of that. So I'm like, okay, well, whatever. This is as true a measure as I've ever seen. And they came back, I don't remember the number, I did write it down, but the nurse came back and said that Kelly had the highest iron levels that she had seen in any of the babies that she had tested in the last like 6 months. And
really?
I was like, what? So I definitely walked out of there giving myself a little pat on the back.
Nice.
And I was like, because I'm like, that's all me. And for anyone who like criticizes my vegan diet or is concerned about, you can't be vegan and breastfeed a baby, yes you can. You know, and I weighed her yesterday, and she's like, I mean, she's just enormous. She was teeny tiny, only like 6 pounds when she was born, and she's like almost 18 pounds.
Oh,
I'm like,
gosh.
You know what? And that's all breast milk and no iron issues. So, you know, it's not to say that it doesn't happen, but I just wanted to share that.
No, love that you did, because I think the most important thing is, if you're wondering, get it checked out. Because that's the thing, too, that I always recommend. And I'm sorry, again, to cut the ladies off, because I do want to hear if you guys are considering that as part of your what you're feeding your kiddos. But the whole thing with the iron supplementation is if it's being recommended, just get your baby tested. If they're testing fine, you don't need them, because you're right, they can be very binding and constipating. So who needs a constipated baby? I mean, it's just gassy and uncomfortable. Annie, what kind of foods has Ellie had that are you thinking, I mean, is she on meat? I know she's on meat because she ate my buffalo a couple days ago. But meats, beans, lentils, leafy greens, things like that. Are you finding you're able to slip into her rotation of foods?
Well, and so I didn't know anything about the iron levels other than my own, which I've been taking supplements because I've had just little dizziness here and there. But I did introduce meat. We had meat at Robin's house, which was really cool. And so I made her a pasta, which I put kale and carrots and things inside, hid it inside. And then so she ate the quinoa noodles and the buffalo, and she loved it. It was all over her face. And I gave
I'm
her
vegan
some,
and that sounds delicious.
It is. It
sounds
it's
delicious.
Delicious.
It's really good. So, and then I gave her chicken yesterday for the first time and I had made a lentil and carrot and something else mixture. And when she first tried it, she was like, blah, 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 blah. Like the lentils, it just has a distinct flavor, but I knew it has really great protein and the iron
lentils
and stuff.
Lentils are great.
So I've been giving her that too. So now that I was just knowing that sort of meat is a good time to introduce now. So now that I know about the iron, I'll be conscious of the sort of the greens too. And all the way through, I've given her like kale and spinach with banana. I mix those two together. So I don't think that she's sucking the iron out of me.
Other than that,
I didn't know.
Did they test at all at the pediatrician?
I don't know, because Jesse went. So my husband went, and I don't. He was like, I don't know. I said, well, how much does she weigh? And he goes, well, I don't know.
That's
what do you mean you don't know? I need to know these things. And then there was a whole form.
That is why I take off work every time and do it myself.
I'm going to go next time. So I know. But he found the paper, and she weighs 19 pounds and something.
So nice.
I totally thought she was heavier than that, but no.
Yes.
I think Bryson's close to that.
I'm pretty sure he's more.
He's like 22.
Kelly's a lightweight. Yeah. She's 17.7, and I thought that
she
was a lot.
She started smaller than them, though, too.
She did.
Yeah, and Ellie's a month ahead.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Jen, what's Bryson eating right now?
He's eating everything.
Crab.
So anything that you put in front of him. Yep, crab.
Nice.
Shrimp.
Nice.
Lots of beans, lots of vegetables. I do a lot of blending, which really we're at the end of that because he's so not interested in blended food now.
Yeah.
He wants to pick it up. He wants to spoon himself.
Awesome.
That's great.
He's doing really great. And he just does not like it when anybody eats around him and it is not his. And also, if you're eating anything different than him, that is not okay.
I've wondered about that.
So he'll notice that?
Oh, yes. And he gets really angry. So
he's so funny.
You'll have your food, the food that you're giving to him, and then I'll, have whatever I'm eating over on the side, and he'll point at me and go like this, and then I'll try and continue feeding him the food I was feeding him, and he'll push it away.
He wants yours. Awesome. So, well, it makes cooking a lot easier if you don't have to make different dishes.
It's getting to a point now, for that I still have to make different dishes for Fiona.
Princess.
Because she is so picky. She really just wants to eat ketchup. and that's really it. And she just dips her fingers. So as far as iron, I have to say that I'm terrible. I don't even know what iron-rich foods are.
I mean, it's not even that big of a deal, too, as long as they're eating.
You know what? They gave us drops for Fiona and for Bryson. Fiona breastfed much longer and didn't eat solids quite as quickly. And I met with this really fantastic doctor who was actually retired. He was just volunteering, coming in and helping. And he looked at me and he was like, there are these waves.
Yeah, totally.
And we're on the vitamin D wave. And he was like, you take her out into the sun. I mean, without sunscreen. And I said, well, yes, of course. And he's like, no, really. I mean, do you let her get sun on her body and don't lather her up, but just let the sun enrich her body like at least once a day? And I said, yeah, I think so. And he said, then she's getting vitamin D. So
that's so funny.
So, and he was very sweet about it. And then I had another doctor who said this, and this was great too. She was like, vitamin D doesn't hurt them. And I said, well, yeah, that's true. She said, so why not just give it to her? Mm. And I was like, oh, that's a good point, too. So, I mean, to be honest, I'm lazy. I'm not really interested in doing the vitamin D drops, so I just haven't done them. I haven't been tested, so I don't know their levels, but they're super healthy, both of them. So I'm not really concerned about it. But that was the different feedback I got. And I think whichever one you subscribe to, I think both are great. It doesn't hurt them. So if you're going to give it to them, just give it to them.
And I think with the amount of food that Bryson's eating and the variety of food, like, I wouldn't be worried about an iron
not
deficiency.
At all.
I had never even thought about it when I was feeding my kids at this age. And it was actually, I hope my pediatrician's not listening, but we had brought him in, at 6 years, and they wanted to do an iron test. And I was like, have you met my kid? Like, he has so much energy. And I know that that's not always the big, the main thing. But a large sign is lethargy. And I was he bounces off the walls all over the place. I'm like, I promise you, when he's showing signs.
I need my iron levels checked, actually.
I know, right? Postpartum mom is a little bit different. I mean, this is a 6-year-old. Yeah. But again, there are signs of iron deficiency. And I said, as soon as I see those, I'll let you prick his finger. But until then, but.
I think one of these, a lot of these topics about being deficient for this or having to supplement for that, a lot of it just comes from formula because, breast milk is just breast milk. But then we see formula that's, fortified with this and has vitamin D and iron and AHA and omega-3s and omega-6s and this, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden, not to knock the formula company. Well, I love knocking formula companies, but, it's sometimes it makes us feel deficient. Like, well, do we have all of that? Like, I don't have
I love
extra
that you brought that up. The reason is because iron in breast milk is bioavailable. So the amount of iron in breast milk is actually lower than in other substances because it's so readily available that the babies can take it in and process it the way that they need to. When we get it from, as adults even, we get them in supplements and things like that, we have to take them in larger dosages because our body doesn't know how to break it down when it's in a foreign substance. And so that's why things like Floridex, for example, is a easy way for us to get iron as adults to take it in that form because it's literally pulverized superfoods. And so, but anything in pill form or when we're giving iron drops, things like that, or iron supplemented in formula, for example, it's because the body doesn't know how to break it down well, so they have lots of higher things. So you're right, when we're comparing breastfed babies to babies who are getting fed in other ways, it's different. We have to supplement with certain things because those substances don't have what breast milk is. So whereas a lot of us, what the marketing, you know, formula marketing companies do such a good job because they're showing that it has all of this. And so a lot of times breastfeeding moms are like, well, does mine have that? Just remember, they're always trying to make it as good as breast milk. Keep that in your mind. Yes, you have all of that stuff in there. They're always trying to compete with us. And so that's where they do a good job at marketing. They have a lot more dollars than us breastfeeding moms with boobs. But anyhow, I did want to ask one final question. And I know that we're, you know, coming up on a year. And for Annie, you had mentioned that was kind of your first initial goal. Jen, I know you were kind of, you know, looking at a year or two. Cherry, you were kind of going for two. And so how are you guys staying motivated to just keep going on? Jen, how about you?
You know, I think I stay motivated as long as he stays interested. Yeah. So that's sort of an easy motivation. If he's interested, and I only work 5 hours a day, so it's a little bit different than Annie in terms of I don't have to work as hard at pumping. I have to say that lately I have not been pumping or like pumping once haphazardly. Yeah. It's just I'm not working that hard at it. But when I come home, he's interested still, and it's occasional, but it's enough. And I do know with Fiona that I breastfed her, I think, 19 months. And I wasn't really supplying all that much towards the last 6 months or so, but it still was enough. Like, it still kept coming. So it's like, even though it's not, like, coming in full and a lot, it still comes and it's still enough to satisfy her and give her that comfort that she wanted. And so for Bryson, I think as long as he wants it and he's still, you know, it still comforts him, then I'm probably going to do it. My only fear is that I have a trip on this coming week to New York, and then in 2 more weeks I have another trip to Fresno, all for work, and I'll be gone for like 4 days, and it's a whole lot of pumping. And I'm so not that interested in pumping. So my only part of me wishes, oh, I should just wean him before these trips so I don't have to do all this pumping. But then the other part of me thinks that, no, I'll be really sad about that because it will be forced. And I'm not really interested in forcing anything. Mm-hmm. So,
how about you, Annie?
I am getting really used to the idea of not pumping at work. Really, really.
And you can. Like, a lot of women stop pumping around this time, 11, 12 months, too. So.
And I've made it through the day where I didn't really need to, and as soon as I got home, I pumped. If she wasn't ready to, or I fed her, you know, whatever. So the idea of just feeding her in the morning and at night is starting to sound really good. I'm not ready to be done. I've recognized that. So I don't know what it's going to look like over the course of, we have a big trip that's I kind of wanted to be in a good place for in June. So if that meant in morning and at night, that's all we did. And then during the day, that would be okay with me. And then kind of wean her towards the end of July. I think that's what I'm planning, because the end of July I have a weekend trip where we'll just be gone. So without her, which will be really scary. So yeah.
How about you, Cherry?
I'm not really struggling with motivation. I think, you know, for me, I don't even know where to start. We struggled so much at the beginning. We had so many problems, the oversupply, the Raynaud's, the overactive letdown, the pain, just everything that, and you know, we worked so hard to get to it that now that we're in a good place, I'm like, I'm not in any rush to give up. But at the same time, just like Jen mentioned, I'm interested as long as she's interested. And so even though I have this goal of going, you know, for 2 years, if she woke up and was, you know, 14 months and decided she was done, I'd be sad, but then that would be her choice. But you know, I just wanted to for sure definitely get through to a year, and I feel like that's definitely easy. I kind of have that one in the bag, and then we'll just play it by ear, and hopefully it won't look the same the second year as the first year. And I'm really looking forward to not having to pump at work. I used to pump twice a day. Now it's like, you know, maybe 2-3 days a week I pump twice a day, and then the other half of the week it's only once, and I'm gone a lot longer than Jen. I mean, sometimes I have 8 to 10 hour shifts, but it is what it is. I do notice that when I only pump once, I do get a lot of milk because I've gone a little bit longer. You know, I don't pump at the same time. So if I normally pump at 10 and I'm only going to pump once, it's it's not planned. It's usually like it's noon, I haven't pumped yet, crap, and then it's 12:30 and then I'm like, well, I'm going home at 5, so whatever. And I still have enough milk to give her, so it hasn't been an issue. So I just keep going, and I have my days where it sucks, but those are few and far between, and I usually just focus on getting through the one day.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for your sharing of your experience with breastfeeding your babies for the 10th month of their life. And for the Boob Group Club members, our conversation will continue after the end of the show, as Annie, Jen, and Sherry will discuss how Ant Flow has affected their supply. For more information about our Boob Group Club, please visit the website at theboobgroup.com.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Before we wrap things up, here's Lara Adello talking about ways to overcome societal booby traps.
Hi, Boob Group listeners. I'm Lara Adello, a certified lactation educator, the retail marketing manager at Best for Babes, and owner of Mama Pear Designs. I'm here to answer some of your most common questions about how you can achieve your personal breastfeeding goals without being undermined by cultural and institutional booby traps, such as, what are the myths about labor medications and their effects on breastfeeding? Pain medications are routinely used during labor, with some hospitals boasting epidural rates as high as 98 and 99%. And while they may not affect your baby's health, they can affect your baby's ability to breastfeed in the immediate postpartum period. Research is where we get the information we need to make recommendations, and this evidence-based information needs to make its way to mothers. Otherwise, it's just another booby trap. The Impact of Birthing Practices on Breastfeeding by Linda Smith has to say, injections into the epidural space are quickly detectable in cord blood. Pain relief drugs cross the placenta and reach the fetus or infant very quickly, in a matter of seconds to a few minutes. The drugs are designed to numb sensory nerves in the mother, and therefore they also affect sensory and motor nerves in the infant that affect rooting, sucking, and breathing. One common myth is that once medication has worn off in you, it is also worn off in your baby. Not so with a number of drugs. The pediatric half-life, a measure of the duration of a medication in your system, of many labor medications is higher than the maternal half-life, meaning they may affect your baby's ability to breastfeed after you no longer feel the effects. Another myth is that there are forms of medication which don't get to the baby. And the truth is, all drugs taken by the mother reach the baby. And the third myth is there is standard epidural, which all anesthesiologists use. The truth is that epidurals can vary, both in terms of the medications used and the dosage. And of course, the dose you and your baby get depends on how long you have one. Other consequences of epidurals, which can affect breastfeeding because they lead to a cascade of interventions, which can ultimately lead to a cesarean birth. Epidural use also raises the risk of maternal fever, infant fever, and consequent separation of mother and baby for the evaluation and treatment of those conditions. Should you choose pain medications in labor, you can still have a wonderful breastfeeding experience. Best for Babes believes that you deserve to know what the evidence says about labor medications and breastfeeding, and that you deserve support should you experience breastfeeding difficulty for this or any other reason. A special thank you to Tanya Lieberman, IBCLC, for writing the Booby Trap series for Best for Babes. Visit www.bestforbabes.org for more great information about how to meet your personal breastfeeding goals. And my business, www.mamapairdesigns.com, for breastfeeding supportive wearables. And be sure to listen to The Boob Group for fantastic conversations about breastfeeding and breastfeeding support.
So this wraps up our show for today. We appreciate you listening to The Boob Group. Don't forget to check out our sister show, Preggy Pals, for expecting parents, and our show, Parent Savers, for moms and dads with newborns, infants, and toddlers. Coming up next week, we have Barbara Robertson from the Breastfeeding Center of Ann Arbor discussing introducing solids to your breastfed baby. Thanks for listening to The Boob Group, your judgment-free breastfeeding resource.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Hey mamas, don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.